Hi there, I'm Brian Abana, and you're listening to the Mall Over Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to arguably the world's most infrequent rugby podcast. We are Mall Over. We've been around for a little while, but we've not recorded since well before Christmas because, as a group of rugby lovers, we have fallen out of love with the game. This week, I am joined by still the nicest man in Cornish rugby podcasting, Ben Eustace. How you doing, Ben?
Yeah, just more infrequently nice now.
I can't imagine.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Can you be an infrequently nice to anybody, Ben? I can imagine you being, well, if I know, you're just nice to everyone all the time.
Yeah, but, you know, recorded.
Yes. Recorded chat. and somebody who, to me anyway, is not ever nice. everyone's favourite South Asian cameraman, the Chinese lensman, Dougie Andrews. How you doing?
Now then, how are we doing?
Good, mate. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Good. I'm glad. How, obviously, it was Christmas and New Year. You spent your time at one of your favourite places, the Ali Pali, all over Christmas and New Year.
16 days.
Absolute money spinner for the lad. What an atmosphere, though. I mean, that fine. Well, you were obviously working on the final, right?
I was, yeah. I was one of six people on the stage.
I've not really followed darts and I watched the World Champs and stuff. I have never heard a noise through my television like that on that final. That leg, the double nine dart leg, was one of the most incredible things I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's pretty special. Pretty special, even for us working there. For various reasons, a couple of which I won't go into right now. But yeah, very, very good fun. And we have a saying when we're working on the darts, feels a bit niney.
Did it feel a bit niney in the finey?
Felt that whole match just felt a bit niney.
Oh, mate. Imagine, I mean, obviously you can't get two nine darters in one leg, clearly, because one person would have won it. But the fact that he missed that double 12 and then Smith went and got it straight away, it was just absolute madness. But what delicious. A final. What a pair of athletes. But talking about the darts, it does lead me on to something, Doug, and it's not the sole reason for this podcast, to let people know that we are still alive. Just we're not quite rotting carcass yet, but you sent a lovely email to the Egg Chasers. A lot to do with the darts, actually, leaning into what it's all about, you know, creating an identity and really running with it and embracing the fans they have and actively trying to encourage new people in, which seems to be the exact opposite of rugby.
Yeah, it just struck me that, you know, I was there for 16 nights. All 16 nights were sold out. Fans from all over Europe, which was... It gets more apparent the later into the tournament you go, because it stops being Christmas parties and it stops being lads on the piss and lads come over from Holland, Germany, all over the world to watch that sport. And I was sat there watching it thinking, what has rugby done wrong? And why has rugby gone so wrong when a sport that, and it is a sport, which shouldn't really be interesting. In fact, it's not a lot of the time, but the engagement it has with the public is just incredible. And I listen to the Egg Chasers, and I've listened to every single minute of every single podcast of the Egg Chasers. So I just felt compelled to sort of write to them and say, now I could have, you know, not big time in it, but I could have just picked up the phone and called Tim and said, look, this is, listen to the pod, I thought this, or text him or whatever. But, you know, I'm a listener to that podcast. I'm a fan of that podcast. So I wanted to interact as a fan rather than as an acquaintance. Yeah.
And rightly so.
Rugby could do a lot worse than look at that. They want to look at the NFL and all that kind of stuff and take their inspiration from there. But if you look a bit closer to home at the darts, I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned there. The players, the fans don't care that the players are overweight. They don't care that they might say some stupid things occasionally. You'll notice there was no real repercussions of the Gerwyn Price episode where he...
Where he pulled the face. Yeah.
I'm sure there would have been internally, but they didn't make a big fuss of it. They didn't want to sit down and have Gerwyn Price in the studio on Sky, you know, groveling for forgiveness. They want people to get lagered up as much as they say they don't. And they fill their venues every week. And like I said in the email, rugby's just completely terrified of itself, of its public image. And it just doesn't care about people like you and me who miss the fights and the rucking and the boggy pitches and the crap grounds that fall to the gunnels.
Yeah, where you could hear the stamping and the battering on the cowshed stands.
Yeah. It seems like every decision rugby's made to grow the game has backfired. And then something like darts, everything it does just works. They decided to go a couple of years ago to do the Premier League, and they did two nights back to back in Holland and sold out a 16,000 seater arena both nights. They've done the same in Germany. They do Premier League all over the country. Blackpool, 2 weeks in Blackpool, sold out every night. Lean into what makes you special and what got the people who are interested in you. And keep them, because by osmosis you'll grow.
Yeah. Ben?
Is darts run by Eddie Hearn?
It is.
Yeah. That's part of the difference, isn't it? It's run by someone who's got a clue at how to do these things rather than a committee.
Yeah.
Committee of people that are so far out of touch with what actually works. And that are full of their own self-interest.
I know, considering a
committee of self-interested people are ruining their own self-interest.
Body. Yeah, I know. Like the RFU appoints people into different positions and stuff, but effectively it is an old committee, isn't it? And WRU is the same and, you know, neither of them are particularly well run.
Well, absolutely. You could look at any rugby organisation. Like Doug's already said, it's so scared of offending anybody or it's so scared of itself that it's unable to see the wood for the trees, for a better phrase. And never has there been a more finer or defining point of what you were just saying, Doug, about rugby being scared of itself than a six-week ban. And, you know, let's just move sort of on to this Joe Marler thing, because I think it was a fairly good place to do so. Of that, he called Jake Heenan's mum a whore. What was essentially a playground insult in bad taste or whatever, I don't really care. For Jake Heenan to then cry to the referee and, you know, say that he was talking about my mum. And Carl Dixon to shake his head as if to say, oh, I didn't hear anything. Well, you did, Carl, clearly, but you chose not to do anything about it. Not that there's anything in the rules of the game. Actually, what's he going to do? Penalise Joe Marler for unsportsmanlike conduct or whatever it might be, because he called his mum a whore. But then to be hauled in front of, like, the amount... where do I go with this? The amount of vitriol and chastation, is that even a word, on Twitter? No. And it's trial by Twitter is what it is.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is.
And it wasn't, nobody would have done anything about it. Like the RFU, you know, Premier Rugby, whoever it was, will have done absolutely nothing about it unless all of these, and I don't necessarily like the phrase bedwetters, but they just moaned and moaned and moaned. Oh, something has to be done. This is disgraceful. There's no place for this in rugby. Let me tell you something. All of those people that have said there's no place for this in rugby have probably never set foot on a fucking rugby pitch. Because in our little Twitter group, Jonesy quite rightly pointed out, if self-policing within rugby, you know, was still a thing, Marlo would have had many, many slaps by now, and he might have learned to shut his mouth a little bit.
Yeah.
Right?
That's so true.
But he hasn't.
For saying that, because it is the most true statement.
Absolutely. And when
it's ever been made in our group, probably.
And when did rugby, you know, rugby was very much, and people say, oh, you're a fucking dinosaur, and you know, the world has changed, and the game has changed. Rugby used to be basically about how much could you hurt each other for 80 minutes? Physically, mentally, verbally. You could say anything to anyone on a rugby pitch, ever. And 9 times out of 10, if they didn't like it, you'd get a slap. And rightly so. And if you deserved a slap, you'd get one. And then the minute that whistle blew, you'd go through the tunnel, you'd shake everyone's hand, and then you'd all go and have a pint, and it'd all be forgotten. So at what point did all of that get lost and someone have a little cry to a referee because his mum got called a whore? And then all of these do-gooders on Twitter just turn around and going, oh, he must be banned. And then the RFU actually banning him. It fucking beggars belief. And I'm not Joe Marler's biggest fan in any way, shape or form, but it just, I can't.
Yeah, it's not an admirable thing to have said. And I think,
of course not.
If we were all playing and one of our teammates said something like that, we might at the end of the game be like, oh, come on, mate, that was a bit much. But like you say,
I wouldn't.
Oh, no, let me tell you, I played a football match once against a ginger bloke and he said something to me and I said, well, and it wasn't you, Russ. And
I know we've all heard that
story. I said to him, listen, mate, you can kick me, you can do whatever you want to me all day. For as long as I live, my kids will never be fucking ginger. And he took real offence to it. And even in the moment, I was like, oh, that was probably a bit far. But I didn't apologise.
So, like, there is a line. I'd like to think there's a line. I personally, you know, and everyone's line will be slightly different. And I think that's where people need to understand that everybody's line of what is acceptable and what's not acceptable is slightly different. I would draw the line at, you know, homophobia, racism, and all, you know, proper hate speech on a pitch. But calling someone's mum a whore, well, you know, it is what it is at the end of the day.
Like, yeah, I think
people... Joe Marler knows that Jake Heenan's mum isn't actually a whore.
I think some people were suggesting on Twitter that he'd done some, like, he'd done some research as well.
Seen that she was in hospital.
I don't think that's the case at all. But, you know, like we said, he wouldn't probably have done it to Wade Dooley in 1990.
Correct.
And you know, that's been taken out of the game. So it allows things like this to spill over. But, it's the logical extension, isn't it, of what we... I mean, it probably was happening before, but, you know, Lions tour to New Zealand, you suddenly started to get refereeing decisions clipped up on Twitter and everyone had an argument about it. And now it's got as far as getting the ref mic involved and trying to split hairs on if the ref heard it and who the ref used to play for. And if Joe Marler's got, you know, what his internet search history is.
I would imagine. I mean, Joe Marler's search history
obviously
would be one of the most basic things you've ever seen. It would just be a mixture of mixed characters where he's buttered it with his ham fists. Like that.
Just cake and hair clippers.
Yeah. and one raised eyebrow. Fucking egg. Anyway, that, I mean, but that's just where we are. That, that no, never has there been a greater example of how fucked rugby is at the moment than that specific incident and the reaction to it. Because there has been, you can guarantee, probably in the Premiership this weekend, you can guarantee people have said much worse things to each other that maybe that wasn't picked up on the ref mic or, you know, just ever. But, oh, it's Joe Marler. Oh, but Carl, my mum's in hospital in New Zealand. So what, mate? No one cares, Jake. And then Luata and all these Bristol fans going, oh, like, this is disgraceful. This is just not wrong. Oh, God.
Fucking yeah, it does. It does boil the piss.
People wonder why we as actual rugby fans are so disenchanted with the whole thing, because rugby isn't rugby anymore. It's not rugby at any level. It's just not the same. So, you know,
so there.
And that, you know, that's part of the reason, not the, that specific incident, but let's say part of the reason why the other announcement in your email was, would you retired us?
Yeah. Well, at the time, Russ, we were pretty terminally retired.
I mean, we were on a break.
Yeah, well, you know.
I think we're at the Rocky Five stage at the moment.
Yeah.
What? This is going to be a really shit podcast.
I think maybe I was a bit hasty in retiring us, Russ, but the point remains. Like, rugby in the time since we started this podcast has gone from being probably the main sporting thing we watch on telly to something that we spend no time watching whatsoever. And to be honest, if I didn't work on the sport, I wouldn't be watching it at all.
No. It used to be something you actively... Like, I used to actively seek rugby out. I used to sit there on a Friday night, actively watch the Friday night game because I enjoyed it. Mm. I'd look to watch it on a Sunday afternoon. Saturdays would always be a little bit of a rarity because I'd be playing or doing something else. But now, like, over Christmas, there were games on. There was a random game on a Tuesday afternoon or something, wasn't there? On a bank or one of the bank holidays that was supposed to be the big games at Quinn's Bristol. And it was on ITV. It was supposed to be the one that was at Twickenham, but they knobbed it all off because of the train strikes. And there was barely any advertisement. There was like, if you didn't stumble across it, you'd struggle to know that it was on.
I think what you were saying, Russ, about the game changing, I think it's a lot deeper than players calling each other names on the pitch. It's like the game's so stop start. You always see, you know, it happens very regularly. A team wins a penalty. Well, maybe there's a knock on in a team's 22. They win a penalty from the scrum, kick to the halfway line. They get a scrum straight off the line out, kick into the 22, get a scrum straight off the line out, kick to the 5 meter and score a try. And no rugby's happened in that time. It's just watching a guy kick to touch four times.
Yeah.
And then a bit of rugby breaks out and suddenly you hear, our tempo, better go back and have a look at a bit of foul play two phases ago. So they stop the game and you have a 5 minute break.
Tweets over a no arms tackle that may or may not have happened somewhere.
So I think the product isn't at its best at the moment. And, you know, there have been games like France, South Africa, which were brilliant to watch, but you aren't going into a game expecting to see that. And the Premiership games, a lot of them are managing to be quite high scoring without being entertaining.
And
also the Premiership's been exposed as pretty low rent because two teams have gone bust and now you've got bye weeks everywhere. And, you know, someone asked me the other day, they were like, oh, what's going on with Bath re-signing and on signing all these players? And it's like, well, those players know that Bath's owners actually genuinely got quite a lot of money. So this is where they're going to get paid. It's probably as much as anything.
Yeah.
So, yeah. it's tricky times.
It is a tricky time, but it's just frustrating as a lover of the game. It's just hard to know where to go.
Have you seen the new laws that have been brought in?
The new advisory about like less involvement of the TMO and all that sort
of
stuff.
Yeah, and like a scrum clock and a penalty
clock. They'll last a week and then they'll be chinned off again like they always are. You know, all the good ideas get biffed off, don't they?
We could get rid of the
biggest joke of a rule, which is the held up over the line dropout rule.
Well, I actually think these laws as a general package, I'm quite positive about them, not to ruin the theme of the podcast, but
with positivity.
Yeah. They're going to chill out a bit on deliberate knock-ons, which I think is a good thing. They're going to make it harder to just flop over the ball and steal it.
TMO involvement? Are they reducing TMO involvement?
They're supposed to be, yeah, cutting reliance on reviews. So, you know, it's supposed to be going back to clear and obvious. Well, I'm not sure that will happen.
All they need to do with the TMO stuff is just tighten up what they can fucking get involved in.
Exactly.
I don't want to hear Brian Rose come over the ref mic when there's been a knock on at the bottom of a ruck on the halfway line. Right. If the ref didn't see it, fucking let it go. Right. And the only time the TMO should come in is when they see legitimate foul play or the referee asks them to look at something. What it says to me, I watch some of the Saracens Exeter game where Saracens absolutely marmalized Exeter. It was almost beyond a joke, but the TMO made more interventions than I think Maxwell Keys did. And he was on the field. There was one instance where he gave two or three knock-ons in the midfield. And then right at the end of the first half, there was a line out to Saracens that was about 5 yards, not straight. They caught it, drove over, and it was just given us a try. And it just makes no sense whatsoever. So if the TMO actually just shut up and spoke when spoken to, that would actually allow the game to flow.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to machine gun water carriers, which I think is a good policy.
Just as they come on, just snipers. Yeah.
More than snipers. One, they're just going to drill them. Yeah, so that's good news.
Can somebody explain why they're having water breaks in December?
Yeah, and what?
Oh, why, it's a nonsense, isn't it?
Why they're just carrying two water bottles each when they come on? Like, yeah. So teams not forming the line out quickly, it's going to lose the free kick, scrum clock of 30 seconds. So, you know, you've been calling that for about 5 years now, Russ. So
yeah.
I am, you know, I think those might all improve things a little bit.
Hope so.
And then they'll bring in the naval level tackle. Yeah, and then it's completely all off. Dead. Yeah, yeah.
And then we'll all be watching touch.
Yeah.
Cool. Right.
Cool,
let's
cool,
move.
Cool, cool, cool.
Let's, cool, 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 cool. Let's move on. Since we last spoke, I think did we last speak soon after the South Africa debacle, after the Autumn Internationals? That was probably the last one we did.
We spoke a week before Eddie Jones got sacked, and then we didn't bother after that.
Well,
yeah.
You know, as per process.
We'll just talk about it now.
Since our last conversation, we have a new head coach. I believe until after the 2027 World Cup, he's contracted 5 years. Steve Borthwick. Any surprise with that, Ben?
No, I don't think so. It would have been my choice, I think. He's done a good job with Leicester. I think he's been lined up to be England coach since before he retired. And I think having someone like that in will do England good. I think he's innovative without being like a mad scientist, because I think Eddie Jones, I mean, I'm not as down on him quite as I think you two will be. I think he did a good job for a long time, but I think by the end he was more interested in sort of trolling the rugby media than he was in winning games, you know, just weird decisions. And I think Borthwick will be a lot more sort of back to basics. I think the best way for England to win is to play like an old school England team, and you know, be as solid as they can up front. Probably kick a reasonable amount, and to just run straight and hard in the backs, and you know, find some flair if we've got it to put in the backs, but just have as gnarly a pack as we can find, really.
Yeah, I think you're right, and you can look at what Borthwick did with Leicester, and the first thing he did was make them really, really hard to beat. You know, people say that Leicester kick the ball a lot, they're boring to watch, they're you know, they're not
all accurate statements.
Yeah, they are, but I don't care necessarily. I'm not one for like All Blacks. I don't want to see England play like the All Blacks, because we haven't got players to play like the All Blacks. We need to play that plays to England's strengths. And what I'd seen under Eddie Jones for the last 18 months at least is no real clear game plan, no real sense of what they're trying to achieve in the way that they play. What I think Borthwick will do first and foremost is create that identity again. And if it is a predominantly kick based game with hard running forwards, then so be it. But at least you can identify a game plan. At least you can see what they're trying to achieve and the way they're trying to achieve it. And if that doesn't work, I'm sure that there'll be a second way to go. What I've seen under Eddie Jones was just a mishmash of different styles and picking square pegs in round holes. And I think that the what Borthwick will do is absolutely simplify all that. But Doug, what are your thoughts on the Borthwick Sinfield combination?
I like Sinfield. I think Borthwick's just a little bit more. I think we'll play pretty dour rugby. Maybe that will satisfy a lot of people. I think we've missed a chance to really, really change the way England rugby is perceived across the world, and in this country as well. Really, there's coaches out there. Nick Evans, as we've discussed, I would have gone more attacking. I would have got Vesti involved. I would have potentially.
Well, there's talk. He still hasn't appointed an attack coach, and there is talk of Vesti still being involved.
Yeah, I see why we've done it. It does smack a little bit of recency bias. I mean, he's had one season in charge as a DOR. Admittedly, he won the Premiership with Leicester, but they were riding the crest of a wave. But then you've got people in the Premiership who have been doing it for years that just were not even considered. And that feels very knee-jerky to me and not something that I think...
Who would you say specifically?
Like, well, the likes of Baxter.
Maybe Baxter, might have turned it down.
He may well have turned it down. I mean, that's absolutely true. But for me, that's it just feels a little bit too flavour of the monthy and not really thought through.
Okay.
Because let's not forget, Leicester weren't exactly tearing trees up this year, were they?
No, they weren't. I mean, they have had a few injury issues, but yeah, you're right. I mean, no team other than Saracens, no team have really been sort of tearing it up this season for what you would call tearing it up. But I think looking around, if you look at sort of coaches kind of around the game at the moment, you look at Farrell, you look at O'Gara, although obviously different in a club style. There's the younger wave of 40 something coaches that do have that recency, that do have that relevancy, sort of edging out the older guys. Although, you know, Wales keep sucking Gatland dry, don't they? So I think they'll, you know.
Oh, that's so regressive. Talk about regressive rugby.
Yeah, well, I mean, thank God that's Wales. And because I would have hated Gatland coming to be England coach. I know a lot of people wanted it, but absolutely not for me. I like the fact that they've got two young guys now. I can't wait to see what Sinfield can offer. If he's anything like, if he can do with England anything like what Sean Edwards did with Wales and has done with France, I think it'll be superb. And if they do get someone like Sam Vesti, who, having watched Northampton a little bit in dispatches, just to sort of highlight, so they are playing. I watched some of the Quins. When did they play Quins? On Sunday? I watched some of it, just a little bit. And they were absolutely scintillating in attack. And they've got, you know, Northampton haven't got what you would call absolute star backs, star names. I mean, you know, Dingwall's the captain there now. Am I right? Is that right?
Dingwall. Yeah, what they've got is what's known as a salary cap efficient squad.
Yeah, and a really good, you know, it's a good all round team. A good, like, they're not reliant on star names, and they're just getting on, and they look well coached and well drilled. And it seems to be working. And they certainly made it work against Harlequins from what I saw at the weekend. They nearly put a 50 burger on them, I think. Very close. So it'd be interesting. I'm looking forward to a new era. I'm looking forward to going on to a post-match interview and not hearing the first words being, "Oh, look, mate. Look, yeah. Mate. Look, mate."
Yeah. I'm looking forward to not having him anywhere near the England setup.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to hopefully Owen Farrell playing 10 not playing at all.
But it's looking like Smith and Ford could be injured, isn't it? So
that's kind of decision made, isn't it? But
it's funny. I just don't get the hate now for Marcus Smith. He's still a fantastic player.
I've got no hate for Marcus Smith. It's either him or Farrell. You can't play them both. And you know, that's it. And Owen Farrell is not a 12. He's a world-class fly half. He's not even a good 12, I don't think. So, you know, there you go.
Yeah, that would be what I'd do as well, Russ. I think I'd play Farrell at 10 at the moment.
And I would have, you know, when fit, I'd have Smith coming off the bench as an option. You can move things around. You can do with someone like Smith on the bench. You've actually got more. You've got more options. Like, you could have Smith and a Malins type 23 or a Daly or whatever. But, you know, I don't think Eddie Jones, he was just, like you say, Ben, in your opening bit, he was very much trolling the media most of the time, trying to be as controversial as possible. Right, let's wrap it up there. We've got 4 minutes for some any other business. Doug, I'm sure you've been watching or have watched something on television that you're going to give a recommendation for. Or have you got any other business?
Not right now, actually. I haven't watched anything new that I can remember. Well, no, Slow Horses season 2 on Apple.
Okay. Slow Horses.
Yeah. Nice. You haven't got Apple TV, have you? So
No, probably not. I might have. Can't find it. Ben,
well, I would highly recommend it.
Anything from you?
No, not really, mate. I'll let you have the 3 minutes.
I don't want 3 minutes. I've watched some terrible stuff on television, as Doug will probably know. I watched there was a series on Netflix called The Recruit that was quite good. Get that. I don't tell you what not to watch, that I watched over a couple of nights recently, was Treason. That was also on Netflix. That was one of the most terrible miniseries I think I've ever seen. If you imagine Spooks, if you ordered it from Wish. But I gave it 2 episodes and there was only 5. So I felt like I was already committed.
Why are you telling us about this?
Just saying, I'm telling you, don't watch it.
Oh, I see. Right. Fair.
I'm giving you stuff not to watch. So you can give people good television reviews.
Yeah.
And I will tell people what not to watch.
Well, there's an idea for a pod. Russ's shit reviews.
I'll tell you what I also watched as well on Prime. Limitless with Chris Hemsworth. Have you seen that? Okay. So no. Basically, he carries out, it's 6 episodes of him carrying out challenges in an effort to gain longevity in his life. So there's a bit of science in it. It's a bit like a documentary. So there's sciencey bits. There's him doing sort of weird challenges, like he had to swim 200 meters in like an icy fjord, and the benefits of cold water swimming and icy stuff. And then he had to do a high wire walk and the benefits of whatever it was, breathing and whatever it was. So, and the last bit was about growing old, and it was quite poignant. So watch it if you know, it's a decent watch. But yeah, that's it.
There's been some good stuff on the BBC recently. There was SAS Rogue Heroes, which you talked about. The English was really good with Emily Blunt, like a Western series. And Strike is always good. The J.K. Rowling crime thing.
Is that the Mick Lynch thing? Topical. Satire. Yeah.
Little bit of politics.
Love it. Oh, brilliant. Anyway, right. Gents, it's been a pleasure. I'll probably... maybe talk in like a month, because in a month it's the start of the Six Nations. So we'll see what happens then. I was telling Ben before, I'm taking Samuel to the England-Italy match. His first ever rugby match. I'm going to take him to Twickenham. So hopefully we don't get pumped. So yeah, we'll see you
a
later.
Few years we'll hate rugby.
Absolutely. Everybody, been a pleasure. Go well.
Hey.
Podcast Network.